This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. Supreme Court confirms the draft majority opinion overturning the Roe v. Wade decision guaranteeing the right to an abortion that was published Monday night by a news organization is authentic. But the Supreme Court emphasizing it is still a draft and does not represent a decision by the court or the final position of any member on the issues in the case. Chief Justice John Roberts calling the leak of the opinion a betrayal of the confidences of the court, intended to undermine the integrity of our operations, promising the work of the court will not be affected in any way, and there will be an investigation into the source of the leak. President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats expressing some outrage at the possibility of the constitutional right of an abortion going away. Senate leaders planning a vote to put that right into law next week. And the president warning that other rights may be at risk. We'll talk about all this with Bloomberg Senate reporter Stephen Dennis, how the abortion issue will play out perhaps in an election year, and why some Republicans, long wanting this decision, are now shying away from talking about it directly. Also today, President Biden visiting a weapons factory in Alabama, urging Congress to pass his request for an additional $33 billion in aid to Ukraine to help them in their war against Russia. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on World Press Freedom Day, targeting Russia's crackdown on journalists who are critical of the Kremlin. And NASA Administrator Bill Nelson pushing for a change in the way the U.S. government pays some private companies that will help get Americans back on the moon in an effort to save taxpayer money. And now to the Supreme Court. The protests that started Monday night continued into Tuesday morning outside the court on the steps. This after Politico published what it said was an initial draft of a majority opinion written by Justice Samuel Alito that would overturn the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that affirmed a constitutional right to an abortion and the 1992 decision, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, that largely maintained that right. In the opinion, Alito writes, it is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. The case involves a Mississippi law that restricts abortion, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. The oral argument was in December, and a final public decision still not expected until at least June. Supreme Court Office of Public Information releasing a statement today that begins, yesterday a news organization published a copy of a draft opinion in a pending case. Justices circulate draft opinions internally as a routine and essential part of the court's confidential deliberative work. Although the document described in yesterday's report is authentic, it does not represent a decision by the court or the final position of any member on the issues in the case. Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. provided the following statement. To the extent this betrayal of the confidences of the court was intent to undermine the integrity of our operations, it will not succeed. The work of the court will not be affected in any way. We at the court are blessed to have a workforce, permanent employees and law clerks alike, intensely loyal to the institution and dedicated to the rule of law. Court employees have an exemplary and important tradition of respecting the confidentiality of the judicial process and upholding the trust of the court. This was a singular and egregious breach of that trust that is an affront to the court and the community of public servants who work here. I've directed the marshal of the court to launch an investigation into the source of the leak. That's the end of the full statement from the Supreme Court. President Joe Biden asked about this as he flew out of Joint Base Andrews in Maryland.
Roe was correct because there's a right to privacy. There can be limitations on it, but it cannot be denied.
Do you think that this leak has irreverently changed the court? We've never seen this happen before.
Well, you know, if this decision holds, it's really quite a radical decision. And again, the underlying premise, and again, I've not had a chance to thoroughly go into the report, the decision. But it basically says all the decisions relating to your private life, who you marry, whether or not you decide to conceive a child or not, whether or not you can have an abortion, a range of other decisions, whether or not how you raise your child. What does this do? And does this mean that in Florida they can decide they're going to pass a law saying that same-sex marriage is not permissible? It's against the law in Florida? So there's a whole, it's a fundamental shift in American jurisprudence.
On the filibuster, Mr. President, can they do away with the filibuster to codify Roe?
I'm not prepared to make those judgments now about, but, you know, I think the codification of Roe makes a lot of sense. Look, think what Roe says. Roe says what all basic mainstream religions have historically concluded, that the existence of a human life and being is a question. Is it at the moment of conception? Is it 6 months? Is it 6 weeks? Is it quickening, like Aquinas argued? I mean, so the idea that we're going to make a judgment that is going to say that no one can make the judgment to choose to abort a child based on a decision by the Supreme Court, I think goes way overboard.
Thank you, guys.
What does this mean for the midterms? What does this mean for the Democrats' argument in the midterms?
I haven't thought that through yet.
Do changes need to be made to the court in light of this, if this decision holds?
I beg your pardon?
Do changes need to be made to the court in light of this, if this decision holds?
No, we just have to choose it. I mean, look, one of the reasons why I voted against a number of the members in the court, they refused to acknowledge that there's a Ninth Amendment. They refused to acknowledge there's a right to privacy. I mean, there's so many fundamental rights that are affected by that. And I'm not prepared to leave that to the whims and the of the public at the moment in local areas. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Come on, guys.
President Joe Biden on the tarmac at Joint Base Andrews before his trip to Alabama. Vice President Kamala Harris putting out her own statement that reads, the United States Supreme Court has now confirmed the draft opinion that would overturn Roe v. Wade is genuine. Roe ensures a woman's right to choose to have an abortion. It also, at its root, protects the fundamental right to privacy. What is clear is that opponents of Roe want to punish women and take away their rights to make decisions about their own bodies. Republican legislators in states across the country are weaponizing the use of the law against women. And Kamala Harris's statement goes on, the rights of all Americans are at risk. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor promising a vote on a bill that would write the Roe decision into law.
If this report is accurate, the Supreme Court is poised to inflict the greatest restriction of rights in the past 50 years, not just on women, but on all Americans. Under this decision, our children will have less rights than their parents. The Republican-appointed justices' reported votes to overturn Roe v. Wade will go down as an abomination, one of the worst, most damaging decisions in modern history. Several of these conservative justices, who are in no way accountable to the American people, have lied to the U.S. Senate, ripped up the Constitution, and defiled both precedent and the Supreme Court's reputation, all at the expense of tens of millions of women who could soon be stripped of their bodily autonomy and the constitutional rights they've relied on for over half a century. The party of Lincoln and Eisenhower has now completely devolved into the party of Trump. Every Republican senator who supported Senator McConnell and voted for Trump justices, pretending that this day would never come, will now have to explain themselves to the American people. I'll have more to say later this morning, but I want to make three things clear. First, now that the court is poised to strike down Roe, it is my intention for the Senate to hold a vote on legislation to codify the right to an abortion in law. Second, a vote on this legislation is not an abstract exercise. This is as urgent and real as it gets. We will vote to protect a woman's right to choose, and every American is going to see which side every senator stands. Every American is going to see on which side every senator stands. Third, to the American people, I say this. The elections this November will have consequences because the rights of 100 million women are now on the ballot.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, opening up the Senate session Tuesday morning. He referred to the Trump justices. According to Politico, which published this leaked decision Monday night, a person familiar with the court's deliberations said that the four of the other Republican-appointed justices, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, had voted with Alito in the conference held by the justices after hearing oral arguments in December, and that lineup remains unchanged as of this week, and they are on this decision. It's Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett who were appointed by former President Donald Trump. The political article goes on. The other three Democratic-appointed justices, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, are working on one or more dissents, according to the person talking to Politico, and how Chief Justice John Roberts will ultimately vote and whether he'll join an already written opinion or draft his own is unclear. On the Senate floor today, the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, he opposes abortion, but he didn't mention that issue at all in his floor statement. Instead, he focused on the leak itself. He blames it on the radical left.
Somebody, likely somebody inside the court itself, leaked a confidential internal draft to the press, almost certainly in an effort to stir up an inappropriate pressure campaign to sway an outcome. The radical left immediately rallied around the toxic stunt. The cheerleaders for partisan court packing applauded what they suggested was the work of, quote, a brave clerk, making a last-ditch Hail Mary attempt to cause a political firestorm and cause the court to reconsider. Liberals want to rip the blindfold off Lady Justice. They want to override impartiality with intimidation. They want to elevate mob rule over the rule of law. The same political movement that used a leak to move up the timeline of Justice Breyer's retirement process is trying to use yet another leak to make the court less secure and less impartial. Never before in modern history has an internal draft been leaked to the public while the justices were still deciding a case. Never before. Whoever committed this lawless act knew exactly what it could bring about.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell from Kentucky on the Senate floor today. Senator Joni Ernst, Republican from Iowa, is in the Senate Republican leadership. She got interviewed by Newsmax today and did mention the underlying issue, abortion, but also talked about the leak.
And this is a decision that we have been waiting on anxiously. However, this is not the way we anticipated we would hear the news. This leak is absolutely abhorrent. So whoever has done this has really thrown our Supreme Court under the bus. But it's news that we will anticipate. I still believe the Supreme Court needs to go through its proper processes. This was just a draft opinion. I am adamantly pro-life. It does not strike down abortion completely. It allows those state legislators to make those decisions for their own constituents in their own states. However, we need a final opinion coming from the Supreme Court, a final right. decision. And again, the leak. It is absolutely horrible that this has happened to such a stalwart institution in our government.
Senator Joni Ernst, Republican from Iowa, a Newsmax interview. Another Republican senator, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, supports abortion rights. Today, she called the leak of the draft majority opinion from the Supreme Court absolutely reprehensible and shocking, but also suggested to reporters that some Republican-nominated justices, when she met with them one-on-one ahead of the confirmation votes, gave her the wrong impression. Roe v. Wade was set a law and a precedent that would not be overturned.
I really find it shocking that that this would happen. I understand it is unprecedented. Second point is Roe is still the law of the land. We don't know the direction that this decision may ultimately take, but if it goes in the direction that this leaked copy has indicated, I will just tell you that it rocks my confidence in the court right now.
Senator Lisa Murkowski speaking with reporters in a hallway of the Capitol building. Another Republican senator who supports abortion rights, Susan Collins of Maine, putting out a statement that reads, if this leaked draft opinion is the final decision and this reporting is accurate, it would be completely inconsistent with what Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh said in their hearings and in our meetings in my office. Obviously, we won't know each justice's decision and reasoning until the Supreme Court's officially announces its opinion in this case. Senator Collins voted to confirm both Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, again nominated by former President Donald Trump. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington State, is the assistant majority leader, highest-ranking Democratic woman in the Senate leadership. She spoke at a Senate Democratic news conference on the steps of the U.S. Capitol building in support of the constitutional right to an abortion and against this leaked draft opinion that, if it becomes the final opinion, would overturn it.
If the report we saw last night is true, that the Supreme Court plans to end the constitutional right to abortion in this country and overturn Roe v. Wade, this is a five-alarm fire. It is exactly the kind of dangerous outcome I have been warning about and was always the goal of Republicans. They are already banning abortion in state legislatures across our country. They are already planning for a federal ban right here in the Senate. And they already pushed through the far-right justices to overturn Roe and end the right to an abortion. In a matter of days or weeks, the horrifying reality is we could live in a country without Roe. A country where women are forced to remain pregnant no matter their personal circumstances. And yes, we are also talking about situations like rape or incest. A country where extreme politicians will control patients' most private decisions. And let's be clear, abortion bans will not actually end abortions. They will just make them unsafe. And they will hurt the women with the least resources and the tightest budgets. I am furious, furious that Republicans could be this cruel, that the Supreme Court could be this heartless, that in legislatures across the country, extreme Republicans are ready for their trigger bans to go into effect. They're excited even. It is craven, and we won't stand for it. I'm not going to sit quietly, and neither should any of you.
Democratic Senator Patty Murray. The headline at Bloomberg.com, abortion rights to reshape election with Roe precedent at risk. Bloomberg Senate reporter Stephen Dennis joining us now by phone. Thank you for being here. What kind of reshaping are we talking about?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for Democrats, they had been looking at a pretty dismal midterm elections where inflation and the president's low poll ratings were dragging them down. This is offering them a chance to sort of change the subject to an issue that could excite or at least get a lot of their anger, a lot of their base voters, and get them out to the polls. And so this is, we're going to have to see exactly how it all shakes out. But this is something that if this ruling comes down as it was leaked, you're going to have every state capital having a fight over abortion. and you're going to have every race in America. Basically, it's now up to the politicians to decide what abortion restrictions there will be. And that's potentially not just a motivation for voters, but also fundraising and so on. And you can already see Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate and states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, other states talking about getting rid of the Senate filibuster and passing legislation to codify Roe v. Wade. And you've got the Democrats here in the Senate sort of pounding the table saying they're going to have another vote next week to do so. But, you know, a vote already happened in February and failed, you know, got well short of the 60 votes needed to do to pass a bill in the Senate these days. So, you know, we're not really seeing like anything really happening in the Senate or in Congress, but a lot of people talking about things happening. And bottom line, this is going to be a major election issue. The Democrats especially are going to try to highlight, especially since they don't want to really talk as much about inflation and other issues that have been dragging them down.
When it comes to abortion, though, as an issue, according to the polls at least, which side has the advantage?
Yeah, so, you know, generally speaking, most polls show that most Americans did not want to or do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. It's a little messier than that when you sort of drill down into particular restrictions on abortion. But generally speaking, a majority supports having women having the ability to choose an abortion in at least some circumstances. And about 20% or so of people don't want to allow abortion in any circumstance. And, you know, we're already seeing differences in each in various states being run by Republicans, where some are trying to restrict abortion after 15 weeks, others after 6 weeks, others even more restrictive than that. And you're going to see a lot of action in a lot of these states if this ruling comes down, because I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Republicans to deliver on something that they've been talking about for decades. And then you've got a potential there for a backlash, however. You know, one thing that was interesting in how the Republicans have been reacting is very few Republicans in the Senate are talking about the substance of this decision today. They're focusing on trying to find out who leaked it and punishing that person. I think it's a little less comfortable for them to be talking about an issue that that is not really what they want to be focusing on this year. They want to be focusing on inflation. They want to be making the election a referendum on Joe Biden and not about an agenda that the Republicans have been pushing.
We're talking with Stephen Dennis from Bloomberg. Justice Samuel Alito's draft opinion, as it was published, suggests that abortion as an issue belongs in the public debate to be worked out by a Democratic, small d, give and take. And yet, as the reaction is coming through, does it sound like either side is up for compromise?
Yeah, so one thing that's sort of a very Senate kind of a story is, you know, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are both supporters of Roe v. Wade. They both feel like they were that if this decision comes down, that they've been misled by multiple justices, including Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch. So they're being pretty tough on those justices that they helped put on the court. At least Collins voted for Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Murkowski voted against Kavanaugh, but not over abortion. You know, I think what they are proposing is a slightly different way to codify Roe, or a different way to codify Roe and abortion rights that would be more narrow than what the Democrats are talking about. And theoretically, you could get to about 50 or 51 votes for a narrow bill like Collins and Murkowski support. But of course, in the Senate, 60 votes is a threshold, not 50, not 51. And so you have them saying that they'll back this bill, but it really doesn't matter unless they would also be willing to change the Senate filibuster rule so that you could pass bills with a simple majority. And they're still not willing to do that. And the other person not willing to do that is a key supporter of abortion rights is Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. And so she is getting blowback from Democrats over her stance against changing the filibuster rule. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called her out. There's talk of her being primaried in 2 years. And, you know, I think she was already likely to face a primary over her role in shrinking and ultimately the defeat of the Build Back Better legislation last year without even a vote. I think this Roe v. Wade ruling and her position on the filibuster sort of makes that primary challenge pretty much a certainty. And we'll see if she can recover in a couple of years, because her poll ratings have dropped among Democrats in Arizona.
Stephen Dennis covers the Senate for Bloomberg. Find his stories at Bloomberg.com. And on Twitter, he's at Stephen Dennis, Stephen T. Dennis. Thank you very much.
Great to be here.
And Stephen Dennis's article includes this: 16 states and the District of Columbia have the right to abortion, to obtain an abortion enshrined in law, according to the Guttmacher Institute, a research organization that supports the right to an abortion. But more than 20 states have laws already on the books that would ban some or all pre-viability abortions once Roe is overturned. Washington Today continues in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. A story at Reuters: President Joe Biden heading to Alabama on Tuesday to visit a Lockheed Martin company facility that manufactures the anti-tank Javelin missile, putting the spotlight on a weapon that has helped Ukraine fight Russia's invasion. Biden using the visit to press Congress to approve his proposed $33 billion assistance package for Ukraine, including more than $20 billion in military aid. Aid to Ukraine has not been a subject of the usual partisan bickering among lawmakers, but $20 billion is a huge jump, and any legislative proposal that can fall victim to political polarization in Washington. And the article goes on: Biden, a Democrat, visiting a state that has backed Republican presidential candidates for decades to avoid that outcome. The Lockheed plant in Troy, Alabama.
You're allowing the Ukrainians to defend themselves. And quite frankly, they're making fools of the Russian military in many instances. A big part of the reason they've been able to keep up fighting and to make this war a strategic failure for Russia is because the United States, together our allies and partners, have had their back. The United States alone has committed more than 5,500 javelins to Ukraine. You're changing the nation. You really are. Add to that significant supplies from our allies and partners, as well as many thousands of other anti-tank and anti-air weapons, helicopters, armored vehicles, artillery, coastal defense systems. Before Russia attacked, we made sure Russia had javelins and other weapons to strengthen the defenses so Ukraine was ready. Whatever happened. In the last 2 months, we continue to move even more resources and equipment at a rapid pace into Ukraine. We've made sure that there are no interruptions in the flow of equipment to Ukraine. Since Russia invaded Ukraine just over 2 months ago, we have sent more than $3 billion in security assistance to Ukraine alone, us, not counting our allies. And that money is a direct investment in defending freedom and democracy itself. Because if you don't stand up to dictators, history has shown us they keep coming. They keep coming. Their appetite for power continues to grow. And every worker in this facility and every American taxpayer is directly contributing to the case for freedom. And that's something we can all be incredibly proud of, in my view. Last week, I sent Congress, if you excuse the point of personal privilege, talking like an old senator, but sent a supplemental budget, a fancy way of saying we need more money, to make sure the United States can continue to send weapons directly to the front lines of freedom in Ukraine, and to continue to provide economic and humanitarian assistance to help the Ukrainian people. And I urge the Congress to pass this funding quickly to help Ukraine continue to succeed against Russian aggression, just as they did when they won the Battle of Kyiv, and to make sure the United States and our allies can replenish our own stocks of weapons to replace what we've sent to Ukraine. As I said from the beginning, this fight is not going to be cheap. But caving to aggression would even be more costly. We either back the Ukrainian people as they defend their country, or we stand by as Russia continues its atrocities and aggression. I know what the answer is, and I think you all do too.
President Biden at the Lockheed Martin weapons factory in Troy, Alabama, today. An article at thehill.com, Democrats are mulling whether to link further Ukraine assistance with coronavirus aid as a way out of an entrenched stalemate with Republicans. Democrats are eager to pass President Biden's latest Ukraine assistance request quickly, bringing it up in the Senate as soon as next week, but using that aid as a vehicle for the stalemated $10 billion coronavirus package has the backing of both the White House and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Today, the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell reiterating he does not support that approach.
I want to reiterate to the administration, the way to get relief to Ukraine quickly is for the Ukraine package to move by itself. There is overwhelming bipartisan support for getting the Ukrainians as much help as they need as quickly as possible. For that to happen here in the Congress, that package needs to be moved all by itself without the other extraneous issues that we've been debating related to Title 42 and additional help for therapeutics.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell at a news conference with other Senate Republican leaders. That Title 42, referring to immigration and the COVID-19 era restriction on immigration that was due to go away at the end of this month, but a court has now put that on hold. The Republicans have been saying that they will not pass the COVID aid package without getting at least an amendment vote dealing with retaining Title 42. Senate Democratic leaders holding a separate news conference today. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer giving an update on his plans for these two bills, aid for Ukraine and aid for COVID.
Separate topic on COVID and Ukraine. Do you intend to pair those together? Have you made a decision?
Look, we have to. We believe very strongly that we have to get both done. The Ukrainian people desperately need our help. And COVID relief may see it's a little, in a sense, this way. It may be abstract now, but when the next variant hits and scientists tell us 90-95% chance and all of the great therapeutics are already bought up by other countries, the vaccines are bought up by other countries and the American people don't have them, that's going to be a terrible, terrible thing. So we're urging our Republican colleagues not to stand in the way of COVID relief. We need to figure out the best way to get both done, and that's what we're going to try to do in the next few weeks.
That's the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Associated Press reporting from Ukraine, Russian forces Tuesday began storming the steel mill containing the last pocket of resistance in Mariupol. Ukraine defenders said just as scores of civilians evacuated from the bombed-out plant over the weekend reached safer territory and recounted days and nights filled with dread from constant shelling. As the war now moves into a third month, the chair of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, testifying before Senate Appropriations Subcommittee today, saying this war is unlike anything he has ever seen.
We are witnessing right now, as we sit here, the greatest threat to peace and security of Europe and perhaps the world in my 42 years in uniform. The Russian invasion of Ukraine is threatening to undermine not only European peace and stability, but global peace and stability that my parents and generations of Americans fought so hard to defend. The islands of the Pacific and the beaches of Normandy bore witness to the incredible tragedy that befalls humanity when nations seek power through military aggression across sovereign borders. Despite this horrific assault on the institutions of freedom, it is heartening to see the world rally and say never again to the specter of war in Europe. Your military stands ready to do whatever is directed in order to maintain peace and stability on the European continent, a peace that ensures global stability and an international order where all nations can prosper in peace. We are also prepared and need to sustain our capabilities anywhere else in the globe, as well as with our priority effort being in the Asia-Pacific against the pacing challenge of the People's Republic of China. And in defense of our nation, we must maintain competitive overmatch in all the domains of war: space, cyber, land, sea, and air. Second place has no room in the geostrategic competition between us and our adversaries.
General Mark Milley, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, part of his opening statement before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense, talking about the fiscal year 2023 defense budget request from the Biden administration. Sitting beside him, testifying, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. And Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, asked the defense secretary about the long-term strategy in the U.S. helping Ukraine fight Russia.
It's imperative that Russia not be allowed to get away with aggression and land grabs. And it seems that Ukraine, with the support of the United States, is really showing considerable strength on the battlefield. So I wanted to ask a quick question, if you can share with us what the end game is and what you hope to achieve.
Well, the end game will be defined by the Ukrainian government as it engages with Russia. And so I won't try to define that for them. I would just say that we're going to do everything, continue to do everything within our power to make sure that that we support Ukraine in its efforts to defend its sovereign territory. We hope that at the end of this, that Ukraine will be a sovereign state with a functioning government that can protect its territory. And so that's what we're focused on for now and going forward.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, questioned by Senator Dianne Feinstein at today's hearing on Capitol Hill. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson telling Ukraine's parliament he believes that Ukraine can win and expose the gigantic error of Russia's invasion. Boris Johnson also invoking Britain's wartime leader during World War II, Winston Churchill. Johnson, the first Western leader to address Ukraine's parliament since the invasion, did so virtually. Reuters reporting that he said, "I have one message for you today. Ukraine will win. Ukraine will be free. This is Ukraine's finest hour that will be remembered and recounted for generations to come," echoing the words spoken by Winston Churchill in 1940 when Great Britain faced the threat of being invaded and defeated by Nazi Germany. Top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine saying this week that the U.S. could reopen its embassy in Kyiv soon. The chargé d'affaires saying during a press conference in Kyiv on Monday, the U.S. will still wait for determination by security professionals before any reopening. The U.S. embassy there has been closed since about 2 weeks before Russia's invasion, February 24th. In Washington, D.C., a question to the Deputy Secretary of State Brian McKeon by Senator Robert Menendez, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Secretary Blinken has noted that the State Department is returning diplomats to Ukraine and beginning the process of resuming operations at the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, and we are looking forward to the nominee's hearing. How does the State Department intend to weigh the imperatives of establishing a physical diplomatic presence in Kyiv and mitigating risks to the safety and security of U.S. personnel assigned there?
So, Mr. Chairman, as you know, our diplomats assigned to Embassy Kyiv have been working out of Poland for the last couple of months. We've started day trips back into Western Poland, into Lviv. Christina Kavin, the chargé d'affaires, was there yesterday for several hours. And we're planning to try to get back into Kyiv in the near future. Our security professionals will have to go in and do an assessment of our facilities and make a judgment about how we can mitigate risk. Obviously, the Russians can, even though they're not on the ground threatening Kyiv, they can still range the whole country with missiles and aircraft, as we saw last week. So we'll have to take that into account. But the Secretary is determined to get us back into Kyiv in the near future. And I understand Undersecretary Bass is coming up to do a closed briefing for Senator Cardin's subcommittee this afternoon.
Brian McKeon is Deputy Secretary of State for Management and Resources, testifying before the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey, the chair, asking those questions. Russia's mistreatment of journalists condemned today by Secretary of State Antony Blinken. It was during remarks for World Press Freedom Day, Blinken also highlighting China and Afghanistan and their actions against journalists.
Around the world, governments as well as non-state actors like terrorist groups and criminal organizations threaten, harass, imprison, and attack journalists every week. 293 journalists were behind bars at the end of 2021. That's a new annual record. This is according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The PRC continues to hold the highest number, imprisoning some 50 journalists, including 8 from Hong Kong. Other governments use the threat of imprisonment and lawsuits to intimidate journalists. In Afghanistan, the Taliban have systematically repressed the Afghan independent press, particularly women journalists and those working in rural areas. According to a survey conducted at the end of 2021, 40% of independent media outlets in Afghanistan have closed since the Taliban takeover. When individual journalists are threatened, when they're attacked, when they're imprisoned, the chilling effects reach far beyond their targets. Some of the media start to self-censor. Others flee. Some stop reporting altogether. And when repressive governments come after journalists, human rights defenders, labor leaders, others in civil society are usually not far behind. That was the message sent on April 7th when an assailant attacked Russian editor and Nobel Prize winner Dmitry Muratov with red paint and acetone as he rode on a train outside of Moscow. Just some months before, I had the privilege of being on a panel with Dmitry during the Summit for Democracy. This attack, which U.S. intelligence assessed was the work of Russian intelligence, left Dmitry with chemical burns in his eyes and sent a clear message to others considering criticizing the Kremlin's war of aggression against Ukraine.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken, his remarks at the Foreign Press Center in Washington on this World Press Freedom Day, which was first declared in 1993 by UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. This year's World Press Freedom Day Global Conference being held in a hybrid virtual and in-person format in Uruguay. The theme is Journalism Under Digital Siege, focusing on the digital era's impact on freedom of expression, safety of journalists, and access to information. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson testifying today before a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee about the space agency's budget requests for the next fiscal year. In 2023, $26 billion, about $2 billion more than this year. NASA has set a goal of putting humans back on the moon's surface by 2025. And Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas, the subcommittee's ranking Republican, asking Nelson what might stand in that way.
Given the amount of work that remains to be done with test flights and developing and testing a lander and space suits, what do you see as the largest technical threat to landing our astronauts on the moon by 2025?
First of all, you all have helped us so that that landing will occur, because there have been indications, and we hope that you will consider favorably the president's request to start competition in a human lander. Now, as it turned out, the first competition, NASA simply did not have enough money to award for two landers. And by far the most economical of the three competitors was the one that was given the nod, SpaceX, for the first landing. That's a done contract. What we wanted to do, and what you all, the Congress, have made particularly clear to me through hearings all last year, and I happen to agree with you, is that you wanted competition for the ultimate lander. So on the basis of that, we have started the initial process, and if you deem it wise in giving us the appropriations, which the president has requested, then we will have a simultaneous competition, excluding SpaceX, because they already have that under procurement law and can't participate in the next competition. The winner of that competition would have the opportunity, as SpaceX, to land an uncrewed lander first and then do the crewed landing. They would have that opportunity. And then we would have two landers somewhere in the 2027 timeframe, having both have already landed, to make the ultimate choice of the lander that would last for some period of time as the lander on the moon. That is a decision that you will have to make in this president's request. And I believe that that is the plan that can bring us all the value of competition. You get it done with that competitive spirit, you get it done cheaper, and that allows us to move away from what has been a plague on us in the past, which is a cost-plus contract, and move to an existing contractual price.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, testifying before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees his agency's budget, and asked questions by the ranking Republican Jerry Moran from Kansas. Wall Street today, the Dow up 67, NASDAQ up 27, S&P up 20. Labor Department says employers posted a record 11.5 million job openings in March. More evidence, the tight labor market, and also that has contributed to inflation. A record 4.5 million Americans quit their jobs in March. And before we leave Washington today, this note: Norm Mineta, first Asian-American U.S. Cabinet Secretary, has died at the age of 90. He was Commerce Secretary under President Bill Clinton, Transportation Secretary under President George W. Bush. Before that, spent 20 years in Congress, Democrat from California. And during World War II, he and his family were held in an internment camp for Japanese-Americans. Former President George W. Bush putting out a statement calling Mineta a wonderful American story about someone who overcame hardship and prejudice to serve in the United States Army, Congress, and the cabinets of two presidents. As my transportation secretary, he showed great leadership in helping prevent further attacks on and after 9/11. As I said when presenting him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Norm has given his country a lifetime of service, and he's given his fellow citizens an example of leadership, devotion to duty, and personal character. And Congress just passed a bill that would name the Transportation Department headquarters in Washington for two former Transportation Secretaries, Norm Mineta and William Coleman Jr. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. You can get more Washington top stories sent to you each day by subscribing to C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word. Sign up at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.